Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
Good morning, Caroline. As you are listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 WFNZ. We are Intercom Charlotte. WBT also hosts the podcast for Carolina Focus. We're your co-hosts. I'm Ed Billick, along with Sharon Thorsland. Okay, we're getting ready for the election season. We're going to talk a little elections. Sharon has a great interview on how to get young people energized to vote. No, we're not going to be doing any political ads. Thank you. And Bo Thompson has a couple interviews that we'll want to listen to. And then the second half of the show, some segments on Halloween. Sit back and relax, and welcome to Carolina Focus.
Thanks so much for joining us today, everyone, here on Carolina Focus. I'm Sharon Thorsland. Well, Election Day, as we know, is just around the corner, and perhaps this year more than ever, young people can have a huge impact on the outcome of the election. There's a national organization out there called Net Impact, and they have an initiative called Up to Us that is trying to get young people more civically engaged and get them to the polls this fall. And today, we are speaking with Hillary Allen. She is the program manager at Net Impact. Hillary, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sharon.
Well, can you tell us a little bit, first off, what is Net Impact and what is the Up to Us organization or initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So Net Impact is a nonprofit based in Oakland, California, and our mission is to empower and equip the next generation of leaders to create a more just and sustainable world. So one of our longest running and largest initiatives is the Up to Us National Campus Competition. And it's in partnership with the Peter G. Peterson Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative. It was launched in 2012 with the mission to raise public awareness amongst the next generation about our long-term fiscal and economic future. And so the program itself, is an initiative on college campuses to spur conversation and spur civic engagement, in particular about understanding our fiscal outlook and the long-term impact of our long-term national debt.
So when you look at college-age kids and young people in general, have they traditionally been not real interested in this kind of thing, or what sort of prompted this to get going? I mean, have they just always been sort of lackadaisical towards this, or what kind of change have you seen in recent years with young people getting involved with this kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting question. And actually, I was just listening to a segment about this, and it turns out we actually don't have robust data until pretty recently. So in 2014, there was about 19% of college-age students that were voter eligible that turned in ballots. And then in the 2018 midterm election, that doubled. We saw about 40% of college-age students getting out the vote. And so something changed within that 4 years. And of course, you would think it's the 2016 presidential election. Mm-hmm. And so there's good reason to believe that we're going to see really good turnout in the 2020 presidential election if that trend continues. And, you know, me working, I'm a millennial, I work with Generation Z, and just to define Gen Z, these are students who are people who were born from 1997 to 2012.
Okay.
So they are currently college students, and they're our main network that we work with, and they are really leading the charge with civic engagement this year. And I think if I had to speculate, they've grown up and they've come of age during one of the most politically polarized presidential elections.
Yeah.
And they've seen, they've also come of age during the age of social media. Mm-hmm. And so they are truly reinventing what it means to protest, to get engaged. And I think they're, if I had to put it bluntly, I think they're fed up with the political gridlock and the polarization that we're seeing in the past couple of years.
So what are the types of things that you do on these college campuses? And is it a little more difficult, I would assume, right now because of the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, so it's up to us. So Net Impact has a variety of different programs that are all geared towards starting the conversation about sustainability and diversity and really focusing on preparing students and young professionals to make positive change in their careers. Up to Us focuses on civic engagement. And so this looks like this public awareness campaign that I mentioned, raising awareness and starting nonpartisan conversation, focusing on viewpoint diversity about our long-term fiscal outlook. And then particularly this year during the election year, we are joining the efforts to get out the vote. So we have an election hub on itsuptous.org, and college students can go there to get resources on how to host an event themselves, how to host one of these conversations that focuses on viewpoint diversity, and understand the fiscal impact of their vote. We believe that an informed voter is an empowered voter. We just want to support these young people in leading the charge in their passion for civic engagement, whatever that looks like for them.
You've mentioned the fiscal impact that their vote can have. Do kids this age, or really I think probably a lot of people maybe don't realize how important their vote is when it comes to what's going on in our economy and in years to come and things that it could impact down the road? Is this something that they're really not aware of? And what's their reaction when you sort of, give them an outline of what this is?
Yeah, well, so I have noticed that they're not aware of it, and we can't blame them because our national media doesn't really talk about our fiscal outlook in terms that are truly digestible. It's an issue that constantly gets pushed back to the back burner. We might see in the election cycle talk about the national debt ceiling being increased. And so students are really surprised. There's a lot, they feel like they have a lot to learn in this program. And many times a common reaction was, how do I not know about this? And how have I not been educated about the importance of fiscal policy? And we talk about it in the sense of, these are your tax dollars. This is public money that our society should have more of a say in how it's being allocated. And ideally, in a perfect world, our federal budget would reflect our society's values, right? But you could say we're arguably not seeing that. And it's all about the conversation that has to be had about what are our values as a society and how do we want to allocate that money. And so that is part of OPTUS's mission, is starting to first educate this next generation of leaders about learning about fiscal policy and how it regulates the economy and how it creates the world that we want to see. And then the next step for that is really advocating for the priorities and the values that they want to see shine through in the federal budget.
So that's one of the things that people can learn about in this, the hub. And what other things can they find in this 2020 election information hub?
Yeah, so there's what we call a guide to fiscal issues. What's it called? It is I'm forgetting the title of the specific resource, but it's a resource that educates people on the fiscal impact of their vote. So okay. You can get a clearly laid out structure of who you're voting for, who's going to be on the ballot at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level.
Wow.
And who's in charge of these fiscal decisions. So at the, you know, at the city level, it's your local comptroller. And so many times these are people and representatives on the ballot that don't get talked about. But those people matter. And we should know, we should be educating ourselves on how those people are, how they view public money and how they view the budget, which they're going to be in charge of. So wow. Resources like that. You can also get access to the Get Heard guide, and this is going to tell you about how to actually reach out to federal and state elected representatives, best practices for that. You can also find resources on how to host your own event. So for example, you can host what we call a deliberative dialogue as opposed to an debate, which is a conversational format that you can have with this issue guide that helps you facilitate a conversation that will spur viewpoint diversity and find common ground ultimately.
Well, when you mentioned the list of candidates at every level, and I mean that's a huge amount of research that you guys must have to put in to come up with all the candidates and find their stances on things. And then not only that, it seems like something that everybody should be aware of, not just the college age and the young folks that you're talking about, because when you just said, you know, comptroller, I couldn't tell you who's running for comptroller, who the comptroller is in Charlotte. So it seems like this is a great resource for everybody, not just young people.
It absolutely is. And I'll just mention that our resources don't go into the specific candidates for each district, but they do tell you what each of these roles are
okay.
that are in each state structure, city structure, and federal structure. And just being acquainted with the titles and the roles
sure.
is extremely helpful. And I'm not going to lie myself. I didn't know what the role of a comptroller was. It's just something that we don't talk about. And we've gotten so far away from civics education in this country. And so we really see ourselves as stepping into that void to educate the public about these really important public positions.
So how many college campuses would you say you're involved in right now?
So in the current cohort of the competition, we have 35 teams. This is a much smaller cohort than previous years. We typically have about 100 to 125 teams in the competition, but given the pandemic this year, it's been much more difficult for students. Students are really struggling this year. It's a completely different ballgame with the pandemic, juggling online courses. Many are working, supporting their families. We're in the middle of an economic recession. So it's been much harder, but I've been extremely inspired and privileged to work with these young people who are so resilient and committed to learning about the civic process and are committed to getting involved.
As in this time, like you say, there's just not as much education on civics anymore and things like that. So why is it so important to have a program like what you guys have come up with this Up to Us and the Net Action? And why is it so important to have this resource for students?
Yeah, I think when I think about our role in the space right now, I think that it is so important to have nonprofits and organizations dedicated to the democratic process itself and not tied to any political agenda or political party.
Yes.
Because everything that you consume today, whether it be a piece of news or you know, something that you read, it is becoming harder and harder to parse out unbiased content. Yes. And so we are so committed to ensuring the impartiality of our content and focusing on the civic process and the democratic process. And it's startling to see the reaction of these young people that are like, wow, I had no idea that we spend $1 billion a day on interest on our national debt. So, and there's, you know, there's tons of stories like that, they feel so far away from this civic process. And so I think that's why it's so important for us now in this space and time and social movement that we're living through, especially politically, where it's so polarized and getting even further polarized. I think it's extremely important for programs like this.
Do you think that will help as these students become educated with your program and get out there in the voting world? Do you think that will help bring together the, you know, we've got, like you said, we're so far apart in our political parties. Do you think that having students learn this type of stuff and get this unbiased information, do you think that'll help eventually maybe bridge this divide and bring things back a little more normal like they should be?
Yeah, we do. We do. We think it can change from within, and it starts with the individual. Politics is a very personal process, but it all stems from the individual. And if we can teach the next generation of leaders how to have a conversation with those that disagree with them, that is an interpersonal communication thing. And there's lots of different ideas out there on how to decrease the polarization, but absolutely this type of program, we think is, you know, our long-term vision is to mitigate that political gridlock and find more common ground and equip the individual leader with the skills to bring people together and to find common ground.
What are you telling students this fall that's the most important thing for them coming into this 2020 election? What's your main message to them?
The main message is to get involved. There are so many different ways that folks can take action. And of course, with the Election Hub, getting registered to vote and then actually following through to go out and vote is extremely important. And so that is a big message to our cohort right now. And then I think just under that, it's getting involved. And it's asking them the question, what does that look like to you? What issue feels authentic to you? And how, again, there's so many different ways to get involved, but in order to show up authentically and passionately, it has to be unique to what you're interested in. And so a lot of times it's just giving them that nudge to prompt them to think about what they deeply care about, and then giving them the opportunities to take action.
What's been the response from students that you've worked with, particularly leading up to this election? What's been their response when you teach them these things and when they even find out that you exist to begin with? How do they react to this?
Really positively. Many are surprised that they haven't heard about us before, and I think they're really excited to have someone that is giving them the opportunity to be in the driver's seat creatively and directionally with their own campaign. So they're managing their own budget with their campaign funds, they're forming a team, they're creating campus partnerships. So we're really trying to replicate what it would be like for a real life campaign management situation. And so they get really excited about that opportunity. And I think it's an element of trust. Like, we are trusting them with managing a budget and keeping their small team on track for the course of the 8 weeks. And so we've seen, as I mentioned, you know, our enrollment in the program is lower this year, but for the folks that are in. They're extremely excited and I think grateful for the opportunity to make a difference in their communities.
So the program's been in place now for several years. Has anybody gone through the program and graduated from college and gone on to get more involved in politics that you're aware of? Anybody run for office or anything?
Lots, yeah, absolutely. We've had, just most recently, we had a student who was on a pre-med track and got involved enough to us. His background was in communications and pre-med, which was an interesting combination yeah. in its own right. But then after Up to Us, he realized that he could use his communication and medical background to change healthcare policy. And so an interview that he did through Up to Us actually got picked up by his elected official in Michigan. And she reached out to him to offer him an internship for her office. So that's one example. We've also had folks, there's another alumni from earlier in year two who, because of the skills he learned in Up to Us, he was able to create a petition about a project that he's deeply involved in to increase the number of Syrian refugees from Syria. And it went all the way to the White House, and he got an invitation from the White House. And he got so many petitions. The petition was so successful that under the Obama administration, he actually was able to change the policy.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty impressive that that is having this type of an impact. For our listeners right now, how, if they want more information about the Up to Us program and also about the Election 2020 Hub, where can they find more information?
So you can check out itsupus.org. And there you can find the Election Hub with all the resources that I mentioned to understand the fiscal impact of your ballot this year. And also check out the spring competition for our next cohort, which is starting in mid-February.
Super. All right. So uptous.org. And you can find much more information about the Up to Us organization as well as their Election 2020 Information Hub. We've been speaking with Hillary Allen. She is the Program Manager at Net Impact, which oversees the Up to Us initiative. Hillary, thanks so much for joining us today. This has been really interesting.
Thanks so much, Sharon. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Good luck to you in the next cohort starting in February.
Thank you, Sharon. Hey, two little topics before we go to break. GOP Chairman Nick Whatley spoke about Trump's visit to Gastonia this week with Beau, and then information manipulation activity by Iran and Russia. Do you believe that? Our cybersecurity expert Teresa Payton helps us understand right here on Carolina Focus.
WBT on this Thursday, October 22nd, and this was last night in Gastonia.
This is one hell of a big crowd. And we're going to win four more years in the White House.
Last night in Gastonia and on the WBT hotline, let's bring on the chair of the NCGOP, Michael Whatley, is back with us. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Bo. How are you guys doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. I'm guessing you probably didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night.
Tell you what an exciting night. We had well over 20,000 people show up over at the Gastonia Municipal Airport, and you know, people from Asheville, people from Hickory and Watauga County, people from Charlotte, really all over Western North Carolina that came out there. Largest political event ever in the history of North Carolina. And Donald Trump put on a heck of a show.
Well, he spoke for a good long while, seemed to be enjoying himself last night. And so I was wondering, I was going to ask you, that was my next question. What did the final number tally? Because this was kind of a, he was on stage and it was basically you had people in the round almost there. And did you have to turn people away? I mean, did they have capacity to, how did it all, because I know they were busing people in all day, as I understand it and talked to Mark Garrison, who was covering it there last night.
Yeah, you know, they let everybody in until he started speaking, and then the Secret Service kind of locked it down. But there were thousands of people that did not get in there. The final registration count was a little over 28,000 people.
28.
Absolutely amazing, amazing turnout.
So now we have the debate tonight, and as we look at this race, we're 12 days away now, Michael. And you had Kamala Harris speaking at Truist Field last night. They had a little less than 200 people. And then you're talking about well above 20,000. What does that say to you about the state of North Carolina for this race?
You know, I think it says a couple things. First off, it says that there's a very different approach to the campaigns that Joe Biden has that from President Trump. You know, President Trump wants to talk to people. President Trump wants to get out there and deliver his message. And this is a formula that worked very well in 2016. You know, he is a communicator, and he is somebody that wants to get out and talk to people. There has never been anybody in politics who's really drawn crowds the way that he has to these rallies. And it's a huge, huge lift for the grassroots here in North Carolina. You know, the Harris campaign, the Biden campaign, they just really want to keep everybody under wraps. They want to keep everything secret. They don't want to tell you what they're going to do with court packing. They keep denying that they're going to endorse the Green New Deal. They keep denying they're going to eliminate fracking after they said they're going to. You know, they flip-flopped on a lot of issues. But it really is a very interesting campaign style that all of the Democrats have run. Cal Cunningham is hiding in his basement right now. Governor Cooper's hiding in his basement right now over at the governor's mansion. They're not letting Joe Biden out at all this week. So, you know, I think that they basically feel that they can make this a referendum on the president. We love that question, because I'll tell you, the support for the president right now all across North Carolina and all across the country is as high as it's ever been.
Talking to Michael Whatley, the chair of the NCGOP, on the heels of last night's raucous crowd there in Gastonia.
You know, in the way that everybody understands North Carolina is as tight can be. But this feels just an awful lot like 2016, where everybody in the media has been trying to say this thing is out, that Joe Biden now, Hillary Clinton then, had a huge insurmountable lead, that President Trump never had a chance. And the excitement, the enthusiasm that we're seeing everywhere we go. We had 15,000 people show up in Winston-Salem. We had 7,500 people show up in Greenville on a Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Every single time the president comes into state, there's a jolt politically that just really lifts people up and gets them motivated.
And final thing, got about 30 seconds here, but again, back to last night, a record-breaking crowd. As you said, you've seen a lot of Trump rallies in the last several years. Where does the one last night in Gastonia, of all places, rank with you?
Number one. We've never had a crowd that big. We've never had enthusiasm that big.
Michael Whatley, I appreciate you checking in. I know it was a long night and you got a long days ahead, but we'll stay in touch. NCGOP chair, thanks for calling in.
Yes, sir. Have a great day.
Let's bring her on the line right now, our cybersecurity expert on a Thursday, because there's breaking news. Teresa Payton, good morning to you.
Hi, Bo. Good morning.
You said something's about to go down. There's about to be a press conference, and sure enough, there it was. What's your reaction to all this?
Well, I mean, to me, it was a watershed moment for many reasons, Bo. I mean, first of all, I don't know how Putin is feeling about this morning, but Iran just leapfrogged him in a manipulation scheme in global elections. So, you know, obviously they both deny that they're involved, but a little one-upsmanship happened here. I applaud the FBI and DHS for having that public press conference and all the hard work that went into uncovering this. Thankfully, they said our election systems, I was a little worried because they used election systems when they said we're going to have a press briefing. They said none of them been hacked. But the hacking of our minds and our hearts and how we think about voting or not voting at all, that actually may be worse. And so there's a lot of unanswered questions here, like what kind of data? Where did they steal it from? We know it's publicly available, but was it appended with other data? And these are the things we've found so far. What about the known unknowns? What other political manipulation campaigns are going on right now that haven't been discovered.
So here you have Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe in this press conference, who Trump is a fan of. Christopher Wray, I wouldn't necessarily put him in that category with the president right now, the director of the FBI. And now what I wonder is, tonight you have the big showdown between Biden and Trump. I wonder if this topic, this breaking story, finds its way into the discussion tonight.
I don't know how it couldn't. It's very relevant, and people may remember it was just a few weeks ago that the current administration imposed additional crushing sanctions on Iran, and so this could be a form of political payback. This is very disturbing. The other thing is it did make it to Twitter. So these emails and the videos actually left the emails, went to Twitter. Twitter says, well, we shut it down quickly. But as you and I know, Bo, you can't tell people to unsee what they saw. And people tend to grab videos. They will come back, and they may be traded and shared within private messaging platforms.
Real quick, the headline is Russia and Iran. And obviously, Iran is not a name we've associated with this like we have Russia in the past several years. But there's a point of delineation here, correct?
There is a point of delineation. And so Iran was very focused on voter intimidation and disinformation. And as I learned in writing my book, Manipulated, on this very topic, it's not always about picking winners and losers, although clearly Iran has a favorite and Russia may have a favorite, just like China and North Korea do. But Russia's approach to this is very different. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I believe China, North Korea are also playing a role in misinformation manipulation campaigns, but more to come on that.
You mentioned Twitter. You can follow Teresa on Twitter, at Tracker Payton, for all the latest information, just like I do. Hey, thanks for calling in on short notice, but who else would I talk to in a situation like this? You're the best. Thank you.
Oh, you're the best, too, Bo. It's always great to talk to you.
Welcome back to Carolina Focus, everyone. I'm Sharon Thorsland. Well, as the election draws near, not everyone is convinced that it will be a fair one. A recent study showed that over 31% of college students do not believe that it will be a fair election. So Dr. Melissa Venable is an education advisor for Best Colleges, and she joins us now to discuss that survey and what it means. Dr. Venable, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about what this study is. When did you do it and why did you do it?
We conducted this mid-September, and what we wanted to know was a little bit more about that age range, is college students 18 to 23. How are they feeling about the election? What are their sort of attitudes about the issues? And then are they registered, and what are their plans for voting?
So I was reading the survey, and it's almost disturbing to see what some of their reactions to things were. In particular, that they do not trust this is going to be a fair election. Why do you think that is, and what were there some of their responses?
That's true. Only 31% agree that it'll be free and fair, and only 26% that they said that they agree that they trust the political system in general. I think we're looking at a couple of different factors here based on their responses to many questions. Part of it is a lack of trust in the process and not feeling that their votes will count. Only about passion and about the same number felt that their vote would have an impact on their own lives day to day.
Wow.
And then on the candidates is the second piece in a level of trust, and where the students are telling us only about half feel that they're represented in the national election, and a little less than half say that there's a candidate that represents their political beliefs.
What do you think is the disagreement there? When I know that maybe, is it the age factor of the candidates? Is it just where they stand politically? I mean, that seems to be, that's a big number to feel like they're not represented in this election.
Absolutely. And I think this age group, like many age groups, is struggling with the division and having sort of two extremes, that seem like that's what you're choosing from. I feel like a lot of college students also right now, they're not on campus where they would have been this fall. taking part in events and lectures and rallies and being able to discuss more and, you know, explore the issues that are important to them with their peers and with their faculty members and all the organizations that happen on campus. So while some are getting that, many are not. And I think that's that's part of the problem that we're dealing with right now.
Another thing that I saw in the study is that they just don't trust the political system. You briefly mentioned that they actually don't trust it. What don't they trust about it? can you put that on the list?
Yeah, we didn't drill down terribly deep on that. I think that part of that is the age group, and that every generation in 18 to 23 range, there's a certain distrust of the establishment, if you will. You know, it's things aren't going like they should. We want to do things differently. So I think we're seeing a part of that way in here with those other things, that lack of feeling they're going to have an impact with their vote and that representation feeling.
Now, I know that when I was in school, even, many moons ago, we got a lot of social studies and civic education. It seems like that has tailed off. And one of the results of the study was that only about half the students feel they're prepared to cast an informed vote. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, this was one of the most striking pieces for me in the results that we found. And these students, they're in college, 18 to 23. Again, they don't feel like they've got a grasp enough on the issues, perhaps, or they don't understand the system and how it's going to work. There's some intimidation, perhaps. This is a very strange year. It's going to be a very strange election day with all the precautions that we have to take and expecting lines and not being sure whether your absentee ballot whether you can do that, what is mail-in like, can we trust that? There's lots of news around confusion and differing views about how that's all going to work. You hit on civics education there, and I do think that's part of it as well. The earlier and more frequently we could put into curriculum at all levels, I think K-12 as well as college, those American government classes and civics classes that maybe aren't there and used to be there years ago, to just, you know, what will a ballot look like? You know, what will it be like when I go to the polls? How is the American government structured, and how do the elections, how does that play into what Congress looks like and the branches of government? All those sorts of things may be lacking right now for these students as well.
Did you find a difference in racial or ethnic groups in your study?
We did. We surveyed 1,002 students, and about 30% of those did identify as Black, Indigenous, or persons of color. And that group does feel less represented on the ballot, particularly the Black and African-American students and the Hispanic and Latinx students. They're also saying they're less likely to vote, about 10% less likely to vote than their white peers, and fewer feel that they're informed. So on almost all the measures, many of the measures that we took here, that group of students is reporting lower numbers.
So when you talk to these students and they're obviously having these issues with the election and what they think is going to happen, are they planning to vote? Are they registered to vote?
Great news in registration numbers. 81% told us in mid-September that they were already registered. And then there are others in there that said, yeah, we're not registered yet, but we plan to.
Okay.
So of all the 1,002 students that participated, 70% said they plan to vote.
Okay.
I think it's an encouraging number. However, of those that had already registered, only 67%. So there's some that are registered but have already decided that they're not going to get out there.
Why do you think that is?
I feel like we've got an age group here. This is the first presidential election for many of them. So there's some excitement, and I can go and register and be part of this. But then when we get to, okay, what does the ballot look like where I am? How intimidating is this process? How confused am I about the issues? Then maybe they've decided it's not worth my time and effort to try to figure out. I talked to someone in California earlier this week who expressed how complicated their ballot is. And it's like 50 pages with all of the propositions. It's like you have to be prepared. Wow. You can't just walk into the polling place and be ready to digest all of that. It's something that takes some preparation in advance. And maybe that's part of what we're seeing with these students that we surveyed as well, is a lack of preparation to be ready for it.
What can be done to address that, do you think?
Well, in addition to some of those education and the curricular things that we talked about earlier, I think that the colleges themselves and communicating with students the importance of every vote counting and everyone having their voice. Only 10% of these students told us that they were motivated to vote because they felt it was a civic duty or responsibility. So there's a little bit of a gap there, I think. Providing the resources and kind of maybe even a sort of coaching about how do we think about these issues? How can we critically think about all the things, all the information that's out there, gather the sources that are helpful to us and make informed decisions. So I think there's some education that we could do there as well. And just that reminding people to vote, reminding them how important it is, and then giving time from classes, from jobs and that sort of thing so that everyone can get out there and do what they need to do to get their voice heard.
We're speaking with Dr. Melissa Venable. She is an education advisor for Best Colleges and recently conducted a survey of college age students to see how they felt about the 2020 election. So can you tell us, Dr. Venable, what exactly is Best Colleges and what does it do?
Absolutely. We are a resource and research site for students who are prospective students thinking about college, as well as those who are already enrolled and have questions. We want to make it possible for them to make great decisions about their education and their career. So we provide a lot of content to help them work through those decisions.
Okay. So how does that then tie into this survey that you just did? You said you wanted to see what their thoughts were on it.
Absolutely.
Do you provide them with materials about that as well?
Yes, we're trying to track all the latest and current events and provide, you know, timely resources for this group.
Okay.
So in investigating why they're voting, if they're voting, what their main concerns are, what their issues of concern are, we can help to do that. We've got a wonderful blog. I would recommend. We've got a great blog team that's providing these timely resources, and we have a student voting guide. The traffic's been really heavy on that, which is encouraging. They're looking for relevant resources. And we've partnered with Vote America with the guide as well. So there's some tools on our guide where you can double check your registration status, find out more about the polls where you are, and a number of other great resources there.
That sounds great. Where can people find that information?
Bestcolleges.com. Click on resources and you'll see our student voting guide there.
Wow, that's excellent.
Thanks.
So based on the results of your survey, and just obviously you work with college students and colleges on a regular basis, are you encouraged with where they are with the election process and with the, it sounds like a lot of them were planning to get out and vote at least. Are you encouraged with where they are right now?
I am. The fact that 70% say they're gonna go and vote, even though they may still need to register, if that happened, that would be a substantial increase on the 43% of this age group that voted in 2016.
Wow, that's a big difference.
There was big intent in 2016 as well. So I'm hoping that this group, this generation of students that are known since a younger age to be more civic minded, more socially aware, more politically engaged, that they're going to make the decision to go ahead in the weeks ahead to figure out what they need to do to vote early or absentee or to get out there on November 3rd.
Wow. Exciting stuff. Hopefully they'll have a good turnout. It's a very interesting survey. I'm Dr. Venable. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Dr. Melissa Venable. She is an education advisor for Best Colleges, talking about the results of their survey of college students and election 2020.
And thank you, Sharon, for that interesting piece as well about the upcoming elections. But before we get to the election, it's Halloween. Got a couple neat pieces here on the celebration of Halloween. Cool things that are going on. I was headed to the beach last week, one afternoon, and stopped off and saw a lot of these pumpkins. Place called MacArthur's Farm, right on Route 38 between Bennettsville and Interstate 95. Let's listen to the discussion I had with the owner. And then there's a couple cool things going on up at Charlotte Motor Speedway for this Halloween, right here on Carolina Focus. Good afternoon. We're out here on Highway 38, Carolina Focus. MacArthur Farms down here, and we're with the owner, and you are?
I am Rebecca MacArthur.
Rebecca, and it's Larry over there?
Mr. Larry. His name is Larry Howard. He's one of my corn crew members. That's what we call our staff here. We're the corn crew.
You know, it's funny. You come by this place, and of course, we're, a few days away from Halloween.
Look at all the pumpkins you have here. I've never seen so many pumpkins everywhere. Larry, 500 to 600?
That's not counting the little ones.
We've got over 500 on an attraction in our fun park, so we have several thousands of pumpkins up here.
Now, will you sell them all or a lot for display?
Well, this is what we do. We always return everything back to the soil, so what we don't sell, we do fall here, fall all season, and then what we don't sell, we invite people to come back to our farm, bring theirs back from home, and we have a pumpkin smashing day.
You know, right along the roadside here, I've come by here a lot over the last 10 years or so. We're at MacArthur's Farm. And Rebecca, your full name?
Rebecca Ann MacArthur.
Now, are you, you're the owner. How long have you, it's been in the family, the land? Tell us the history.
Actually, I started this farm from the ground up, literally. I started with a tent in a field with about 20 acres. And then another year or so, I purchased another 20. And I started with a tent in a field growing strawberries for U-Pick. We'd have cars come by headed to the beach. And I remember a lot of out-of-state folks. Ohio was a state that would come flying in here. They had a red, white, and blue license tag. And we started with U-Pick strawberries, and then I went from 20 acres to another 20, purchased another 40. So this market sits on about 80 acres on this side of the road, and we do U-Pick. We pick for several different things, strawberries in our spring, normally pumpkins out here in the fall, a little different this year because of COVID. And then I farm and own an additional about 350 acres. I do traditional row crop farming as well.
Wow. Wow. And then you have all this jarred fruit. And what else do you sell here?
Well, we have lots of jams and jellies, hot sauces, things that we use. We have a small bakery inside. We make homemade ice cream. We make homemade fudge. We do cakes and pies. And we cater as well. We do whatever it takes to keep our head above water.
This is beautiful. And it says here, Certified Roadside Market, Certified South Carolina Department of Agriculture, and, of course, the commissioner's name there. Our farm's fun park is open. Admission price $350. Drop by.
$1,350.
I was offering a sale there. I guess I shouldn't have. And then, of course, you have all the flowers out here.
Yeah, we have lots of mums. We're on our third crop of mums. We have small mums. We have large mums. You mentioned the pumpkins. We have pumpkins anywhere from $1.50 up to $22.50. Anywhere from we have some that are plum size up to probably this year our biggest pumpkin is about 50 pounds.
Rebecca, this is great. Now, if you're coming from Charlotte, give us directions. And if you're coming up from Columbia or anywhere here in the Carolinas, how do you get here?
So coming from Charlotte, you come into Bennettsville, like if you're heading towards the coastline. We want you to turn on Highway 38 from the town of Bennettsville. We're about 4 miles. If you're coming from Columbia, we're an easy drive. Fastest route will be I-20 to I-95 North. You would get off at exit 181B like boy and head 18 miles toward Bennettsville, turn in the parking lot, and we'll be there to greet you with a smile.
Do you guys have a website folks can check out this place?
We do. We have our Facebook page. We have Twitter. We have Instagram. And our website is www.MacArthurFarms.com.
This is wonderful. You know, I'll be coming back through this way on Saturday. I'll stop by, pick up a few of your goodies here, maybe even grab one of these big pumpkins.
Yay. We look forward to seeing you. Thank you for stopping in.
Rebecca, thank you. And Larry, good chatting with you, too.
You too.
Again, we are, where are we?
MacArthur Farms, Bennettsville, South Carolina.
Yeah. Ed Billick right here on Carolina Focus.
Thanks so much for joining us today, everybody. Well, Charlotte Motor Speedway has long been known for its creativity and innovative events. Since the coronavirus pandemic started, they've really stepped up with all sorts of neat opportunities like a drive-through graduation. They've had movies, concerts on the field, and now they've got another great event coming up for Halloween. It's the drive-through track and treat. It's going to take place on Sunday, and I'm sure it's going to be a big hit with the kids. So joining me now, we've got Mike Gilroy and Angelina Franco from Mars Wrigley to talk a little bit more about this event. Angelina and Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Sharon. Thanks for having us.
All right. Now, tell us a little bit about this event. What exactly is going to be taking place?
Yeah, we're really excited about it. The event, like you said, is on October 25th at Charlotte Motor Speedway. I think the primary reason what we were thinking here is we know that we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we know that Halloween is going to look differently all across the country. But one thing that Mars is committed to is making sure that Halloween stays fun and memorable for everybody, but in safe ways. So that's kind of where the genesis of the idea came from. And then in terms of our partnership, whether it with NASCAR and with Joe Gibbs Racing and our number 18 Kyle Busch M&M's race car, we decided, hey, let's think about how we can bring that to life. And it was just a natural fit with Charlotte Raceway at Motor Speedway there.
Yeah, absolutely. The perfect partnership, I would say. So now on the actual event day, what exactly are our kids going to be able to do?
So it's all going to be socially distanced fun. We have 1,200 registrants, so 1,200 cars that are coming through.
Wow.
I'm really pleased to say that while it's a free event, we quote unquote sold out in under 24 hours for the event.
Oh
so
goodness.
a lot of excitement about the event. What we're going to be doing, we're making sure that everybody is properly geared up in PPE equipment, and we're going to have socially distant protocols in place. But people are going to be able to drive around turn three and turn four of the track, and then come down pit road where we have seven different stations where we're going to be handing out some great Mars Wrigley candy for the folks in the car. And then once they go through pit road, there's going to be an opportunity to get a picture taken on the start-finish line up against one of our show cars of the M&M's 18. So, yeah, an opportunity. And then once they do that, 600 of the registrants are going to stay on. And in partnership with NBC, we're going to be doing a live watch party of the Texas race.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Wow, so this is quite an event. Angelina, can you tell us about the partnership with NASCAR and how doing this event really just sort of, you know, helps get the Mars Wrigley name out there even more?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll let Mike dive into some more details. But I think overall, one of the things, as Mike mentioned a little bit earlier, is that This is our season, right? Halloween is a big moment for Mars Wrigley. So we've really looked at this as an opportunity to tap all of our partners. And as you know, NASCAR is a huge partner of ours and we're a huge sponsor of theirs. So it was really an opportunity to make sure that our consumers and fans are having the most fun that they can this season. So we've done several things to really kind of make Halloween a huge moment in light of everything going on. So we have Track and Treat. We also launched the first ever digital trick-or-treating app called Treat Town, which is exciting. We can share some more details about that with you later on. But I think it's really all about making sure we know Halloween is going to look a bit different. So how do we do the best we can to make sure that people are still having both traditional and new traditions for this season?
I gotcha. How much candy do you anticipate will be given out?
Oh, there's lots. I think that when we calculated out, it was into the several thousands of pieces that we'll be handing out to all the people that are coming to the track. So there'll
what
be lots to go around.
What kind of candy? Obviously M&M's, I'm assuming.
We're going to have M&M's. We're going to have Snickers there, Twix. We also are going to have some extra gum there. So everything from our portfolio, Starburst, Skittles, we're going to have lots there.
I know you said that you've already got 1,200 cars coming around. What's been the reaction from people when they found out about this? Obviously they're signing up for it, but have you had any reaction from people who will be attending?
So I haven't heard any reaction myself other than the numbers through the registration, the website. The website went live on Monday and is already, like I said, within less than 24 hours already sort of filled up on registration. So yeah, we're super excited about all the people coming out to the track.
Is this something that, I mean, I know that this is a strange year, obviously, with the pandemic, but is this something that, obviously, it's a huge hit. It seems like this would be something that could be, you know, extended and continued on an annual basis.
It's definitely something that, you know, we're not trying to get out too far ahead of ourselves at this point. We're trying to adjust to this strange year in 2020, but it's definitely something that we're having some preliminary conversations about. Is this something that can live on? So we're excited about October 25th to see how it all plays out, and then we'll reassess from there and understand what we're going to be doing. We are doing a secondary execution of this at the Richmond racetrack on, I believe it's on the 27th. In combination with NASCAR as well. So bringing that to the fine people of Richmond as well.
Wow, what a fun event. So what time does everything get underway on Sunday?
So everything gets underway at about 1 o'clock, and we're going to be doing the trick-or-treating portion of the track and treat from 1 until 4. And then the watch party will go from the race start until approximately 6 o'clock or so after the race finishes.
All right. Sounds like it's going to be a super fun event. And what a great treat for kids here in the Charlotte area and Richmond to do this. So I'm sure that NASCAR and Charlotte Motor Speedway, and definitely the fans and kids around here, really appreciate Mars Wrigley's involvement in this.
Well, we're looking very forward to it, and we'll pray for good weather on Sunday, right?
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. Angelina Franco and Mike Gilroy from Mars Wrigley, they have partnered with NASCAR and Charlotte Motor Speedway for the first annual, maybe, for the at least this year, we have the track and treat at Charlotte Motor Speedway, where kids are going to be able to go around and have a really neat experience and get lots of good Mars Wrigley candy as well for Halloween. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, Sharon.
Thank you.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi.com.